This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the Daily Digest. I'm Tisha Eek with Juliet Jacobs. Today we have two stories for you as always. First up, something completely different. we are looking at whether dinosaurs were warm-blooded. Now this question of whether they were warm-blooded or cold-blooded has never really been properly answered. But some paleontologists think that they may have found the answer in dinosaur eggshells. So we'll be finding out more from the scientist who led this particular study.
And in our second story, as people are stuck at home and anxious because of the COVID-19 pandemic and lockdowns, many are reportedly starting to experience vivid dreams and nightmares. Mm. So we're going to discuss what causes this and also how we can cope with it. And on that note, over on our BFM poll, we're asking you if you've been having more worrying dreams or nightmares perhaps since the start of the MCO. Take that poll at BFM Radio. Tweet us, you know, what dreams you're having, if they are sort of out of the norm for you. Mm-hmm. You can also send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899 and just share how you're feeling.
Yes, but before we get into COVID-19, I'm pretty keen to talk about this particular story. I think it makes for a change from what we've been discussing for the past few weeks. Dinosaurs. So when we talk about dinosaurs, we've always tried to relate them to a modern animal so that we can make sense of what these prehistoric creatures were like. And in fact, their name, right, comes from the Greek for terrible lizard. So I guess that's how early the very early people who discovered the fossils and discovered the existence of dinosaurs tried to frame them in our consciousness. And so, yeah, for a long time, we thought that dinosaurs were like giant lizards and cold-blooded reptiles, in other words. Then, as scientists began to understand more about the physiology of dinosaurs, it was thought that they were much more like warm-blooded birds and mammals compared to modern-day lizards and snakes. So this has been a long-running debate in the field of paleontology. And today we're going to look at a new study that claims to have the answer for us.
Yeah, but before we get any further, though, a quick biology refresher. So what does warm-blooded and cold-blooded mean? So these phrases are often used to distinguish between animals that can regulate their own body temperatures internally, so endothermic, and those whose body temperatures change with their environment, so ectothermic. So in this way, an ectothermic animal like a turtle, for example, can be warm-blooded while out in the sun, but cold-blooded in the shade. And meanwhile, endothermic animals generate, conserve and shed heat in response to their environment. So this makes them generally more adaptable to different climates and ecological niches.
Yeah. And as to which category dinosaurs fall under, we have only had theories so far. So for example, dinosaurs grew quickly and had body postures and physical abilities that would have required a very active, hot-running metabolism to accomplish. Mm. But these are theories that are, you know, extrapolations made by linking fossil evidence to our knowledge of living animals, because obviously we can't measure the temperature of dinosaurs to find out for sure. But making these kinds of comparisons can be problematic because they're based on the assumption that dinosaurs lived, breathed, and grew the same way that modern animals do.
Yeah, and the trick is to understand dinosaurs on their own terms. So one of the things that paleontologists have been trying to understand for the longest time is that very simple question of whether they were actually warm or cold-blooded animals.
Yep. So recently, researchers from Yale University entered this heated debate, shall we say, and they believe that their recent study may give us a clearer answer. And what they did was they looked at fossilized eggshells. So I turned to researcher Dr. Robin Dawson, who led the study when she was with Yale University, to understand more about the findings and the methods used.
My name is Robin Dawson. I'm a paleoecologist and geochemist. And I wanted to talk about our study where we looked at reconstructing the body temperature of extinct dinosaurs using a relatively new technique called clumped isotope paleothermometry. Basically, using this technique, we found out that the body temperatures of all major groups of Mesozoic dinosaurs had body temperatures that were warmer than their environment, indicating that they had the ability to use their metabolism to regulate their body temperature above that of their environment. And the technique we used is relatively new, called clumped isotopes, and it relies on the fact that chemical bonds that involve heavy stable isotopes, so for example, carbon usually has 6 protons and 6 neutrons. Heavy carbon atom would have an extra neutron. So it's carbon-13 as opposed to carbon-12. So basically the technique relies on the fact that if a bond has, say, a carbon-13 in it, it is harder to break that bond than if it was a carbon-12. It's even harder to break a chemical bond that involves two heavy isotopes. So, for example, a fossil dinosaur eggshell, which is made out of calcite, has carbon and oxygen in it. And so if a bond within the mineral of that fossil eggshell has two heavy isotopes of carbon-13 and oxygen-18, it's hard to break that bond. You need more energy in the system, a higher temperature, in order for those bonds to break. And so you can measure the relative abundance of how many bonds involve carbon-13 and oxygen-18. And that can directly tell you the temperature in which the mineral formed. In this case, the mineral is calcite of eggshell, and it tells you the formation temperature, which is the body temperature of the mother dinosaur that made the egg.
So that's quite a technical explanation. And just to summarize, what she's saying is that they calculated the mother dinosaur's internal body temperature by looking at the ordering of oxygen and carbon atoms in a particular fossil eggshell. But, you know, we leave it to cleverer people than us to make sense of this. And for the rest of us who are not geochemists or even biologists, our understanding of body temperature has always fallen into this very strict dichotomy. Right, warm or cold.
That's right.
We humans are warm-blooded. The common house gecko, for instance, is cold-blooded, and that's how we separate them.
Yes, but paleontology has offered us a glimpse into prehistoric times where dinosaurs don't necessarily fit into these neat categories. So here's Dr. Dawson explaining how scientists have tried to investigate dinosaurs' body temperature and how her study's findings change that understanding.
So I think for a long time now, people have wondered about dinosaurs and fascinated us for generations. But what's interesting is that they sit at this evolutionary point between birds, who are warm-blooded or endothermic, and reptiles, who are cold-blooded or ectothermic. And so there's really been this long-standing question about where dinosaurs fit in. Are they warm-blooded? Are they cold-blooded? And so, you know, many people have tried to go about solving this. Some techniques involve looking at dinosaur long bones, so like leg or arm fossils, and cutting them perpendicular to the length and looking at growth layers within the bone and estimating how fast or slow they grow based, and then relating that to their size, and then making some hypotheses about their metabolism and possibly their ability to regulate their body temperature, whether they're endothermic or ectothermic. Other ways people have tried to answer this question is using sort of traditional stable isotopes. So this is just a single stable isotope, not clumped isotopes. Usually this is oxygen, and people will try to estimate temperature on this. But the caveat of using traditional oxygen isotopes is you will usually have to assume the oxygen isotope composition of the water which the dinosaur consumes. And it's there's more assumptions that go into both of these methods in terms of estimating body temperature. And so because of this, this is why there was really an appeal to use clumped isotopes, why it was seen as involving less assumptions than the other methods.
I also asked Dr. Dawson to explain the species of dinosaurs that they studied and whether their findings would necessarily be true of all species of dinosaurs, especially across the various periods.
And so using clumped isotopes, we analyzed fossil eggshell representative of the three major groups of dinosaurs, including the ornithischians, the sauropods, and the theropods. Now, the theropods are the group of dinosaurs that birds eventually evolved from. They're most closely related to birds, while the ornithischians are a group more distantly related to birds. We looked at three species, a Turridon and Myasora from Alberta, Canada, and then another specimen from Romania that were representatives of these three major groups of dinosaurs. And so based on previous studies, there'd been, you know, a lot of ideas about their growth rates and possible interpretations of whether they were endothermic or ectothermic. Some ideas, particularly surrounding the sauropods, which are those sort of long-necked dinosaurs, or that maybe they had warm body temperatures, but not necessarily because they were endothermic or warm-blooded, but simply because they were large and they had a small surface area to volume ratio and thus lost heat slower. So they were just warm simply because of their size. And what we found with our clumped isotope results actually was that the body temperatures of the mother dinosaurs we were getting from the eggshells were all warmer than their environment, which would suggest that they had metabolic ability to raise their temperature above ambient. And so the most then reasonable assumption to make is if that all major groups of dinosaurs had this ability, it was actually an ancestral trait inherited from their last common ancestor, if it was actually present in all major groups of dinosaurs. And so, of course, you know, I think future work would involve looking at more species of dinosaurs to try to corroborate our results, looking at specimens maybe from different locations. And yeah, I think that would be really exciting work going forward.
And what are the implications of these findings on how we understand dinosaurs' behavior and also, you know, why they evolved to be this way? So Dr. Dawson shares her thoughts.
I think the implications of this study really highlight the fact that, you know, we have to keep asking questions, particularly about extinct animals and what they were like, because our sort of expectations keep changing, particularly with dinosaurs, which were sort of originally, you know, named terrible lizards. And we think of them as these cold, scaly things. And, you know, our idea of what they actually were like, oh, now we know some of them had feathers. We know they were able to regulate their temperature above that of their environment with their metabolism. You know, our ideas about them are always changing. So I think, you know, it just stresses the importance of keep asking questions and finding new ways to tackle those questions. I think in particular, what our findings would suggest is that because this trait of being able to regulate their body temperature with their metabolism was ancestral, it does, I think, pose some additional questions, particularly as this group of theropod dinosaurs that birds, living birds, evolved from, they're getting smaller and smaller. It really poses the question then of what the feathers that they had were used for in particular. And it's possible that, you know, as they were getting smaller, these theropod dinosaurs, and looking more like birds, that maybe the feathers were actually used to hold in their own body heat that they were generating. Because as body size decreases, the surface area to volume ratio increases, and it's actually easier for an animal to lose its own body heat. So it's just an interesting idea. And our data would suggest that it's possible that feathers were actually used as part of this mechanism to retain their own body heat, and then maybe later were co-opted for things like flight or sexual display, which we know are, you know, what living birds use feathers for.
So we've been hearing from Dr. Robin Dawson, a paleoecologist and geochemist. She's currently a postdoctoral research associate with the University of Massachusetts Amherst, but she conducted this particular study on dinosaur eggshells when she was previously in Yale University.
And this study answers some questions, but of course it also gives rise to others. So we'll be checking the journals for more research in this area, especially in these recent times when all we talk about is COVID-19, unfortunately. Yes. It is quite refreshing to remember that we can learn a lot about and also from history, and that science is always prompting us to ask more questions.
That's right. It's really fascinating and I think that's why people are so enamored by the idea of these huge prehistoric creatures, how they lived, and how we have eventually evolved to where we are now.
Where we are now, exactly.
And where we are now, literally, right? The situation that we're in. Lots of questions there. But if you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with us on this, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Stay tuned for our second story, though, something very interesting coming up. But first, here's T-Rex with Hot Love, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.